Emma Carpenter lives in self-imposed exile, grieving in a remote, glass-walled beach house with only her golden retriever, Laika, for company. Her days consist of reading e-books and playing long-distance hangman with her elderly neighbor, Deke, through telescopes. When Emma finishes a 99-cent horror novel called Murder Mountain by H.G. Kane, she's unimpressed by its predictable plot and gratuitous violence. Following her consumer instinct, she leaves a one-star review on Amazon, thinking nothing of it. But Kane responds immediately, first with a polite request to remove the review because it hurts his income, then with increasingly hostile messages when Emma refuses. What begins as a simple act of literary criticism spirals into something far more sinister. Strange occurrences pile up. A bird dies against her window. A shadowy figure appears in her bedroom. Mysterious footprints appear in the sand beside her own. The glass walls that offer stunning ocean views now create a fishbowl effect. Emma can see everything outside, but anyone outside can see her too. Is she imagining things, or is someone watching her? The line between grief-induced hallucination and actual danger becomes terrifyingly thin. Emma's grief forms the emotional core of the story, adding depth to what could otherwise be a straightforward stalker narrative. Through flashbacks, we learn that Emma lost her infant daughter Shelby in a car accident after a momentary distraction with her phone. This tragedy destroyed her marriage to Sean, who remains estranged. Emma carries this guilt like the 60-pound backpack of rocks she keeps by her door, a physical manifestation of her burden. Her numbness to danger makes her vulnerable, yet this same familiarity with loss becomes her advantage when facing Kane. She has little fear of death. Grief becomes both Emma's weakness and strength. When most would be paralyzed by terror, she finds clarity in her pain. Her journey isn't just about surviving Kane's attacks, but choosing to live again despite overwhelming loss. When hallucinating holding Shelby while drowning, she chooses to surface, the first step in her healing process. The Last Word cleverly subverts horror conventions by making its villain an author trying to write Emma into his novel, Murder Beach. Kane sees himself as an all-powerful creator, controlling every aspect of his story, from isolating victims to executing the perfect murder. The meta elements enhance the cat-and-mouse dynamic. Kane isn't just trying to kill Emma, he's forcing her into the role of helpless victim. When she defies his script by fighting back, he becomes unhinged, his authorial authority rejected. The novel includes excerpts from Kane's drafts, revealing how he views himself as the protagonist, methodical, powerful, and justified. The contrast between his self-image and reality, where he repeatedly fails despite advantages, creates both tension and dark humor. Most disturbing is Kane's suggestion that his previous novels might describe actual murders, making readers question their fascination with violent entertainment. If his books are confessions rather than fiction, every reader becomes an unwitting witness to real atrocities. The novel's most chilling aspect is how easily Kane locates Emma, despite her isolation attempts. Her digital footprint, social media posts, property records, geotagged photos creates a trail directly to her door, dispelling her belief that an online stranger couldn't find her. This serves as a stark warning about harassment escalation, from polite requests to passive-aggressive comments, explicit threats, doxing, and ultimately physical violence. Kane's progression mirrors real-world harassment patterns, particularly against women online. What amplifies this theme is that Emma's review wasn't even harsh, just honest criticism in measured language. The disproportionate response highlights how some creators equate criticism of their work with personal attacks, justifying retaliation. The novel expertly explores our false sense of online anonymity. Emma never imagined her words as one anonymous reviewer could have life-threatening consequences, a dangerous misconception in our interconnected world. Deacon Cal embodies one of the novel's most shocking twists. Initially portrayed as Emma's only friend and protector, this elderly neighbor and true crime author provides companionship through telescope conversations and hangman games. The revelation of Deke's manipulation devastates everyone. As a washed-up author desperate for relevance, he engineered the entire situation, recommending Kane's book knowing Emma would hate it, anticipating Kane's violent reaction, and planning to heroically intervene to create material for his next bestseller. This twist forces us to re-examine every interaction, his probing questions, unexplained knowledge of her name, and excessive drinking that mirrored her alcoholic mother all take on sinister meaning. Even their hangman games reveal his manipulation, as he consistently wins using medical terms like propofol and embolism that foreshadow his murderous intentions. Deke represents an insidious predator who uses apparent concern to gain trust while harboring exploitative motives. His willingness to sacrifice both Emma and Howard for professional gain shows a cold calculation more disturbing than Kane's obvious rage. The beach house functions almost as another character in the narrative. With its glass walls and remote location, it creates both vulnerability and protection for Emma. She can see danger approaching, but remains constantly exposed, mirroring her emotional state while processing grief. The revelation that the house belongs to Howard's mother, Jules, transforms its meaning. What Emma perceived as a healing space was actually the villain's territory. The bedroom she feared was his teenage room, and he never needed to track her. He simply kept a key to his mother's house. This recontextualizes earlier scenes where Emma sensed a presence, the creaking, groaning, and buttery smell. What she attributed to paranoia was Howard secretly living there, watching her before she read his book. The basement represents Emma's subconscious, dark, damp, and filled with things she'd rather not confront. When she flees there during Howard's attack, it's both strategic and symbolic. By facing what lurks in darkness, Emma finds strength to fight back. The Last Word fundamentally explores how choice determines fate. Though victimized, Emma makes active decisions that ensure survival, setting traps, exploiting the house's layout, and carving messages when death seems certain. Emma's defining moment occurs while drowning, weighted by her rock-filled backpack. Hallucinating, she holds Shelby and feels the comfort she's craved since the accident. Though tempted to surrender to this peaceful vision, Emma tells Shelby, "We'll be together someday, but not yet," choosing life despite its pain. This moment transforms her relationship with grief. Rather than being consumed by it, she integrates it into her identity while refusing to let it dictate her future. The backpack, her burden of guilt, falls away as she swims upward. Leaving Strand Beach, she has literally and figuratively lightened her load. The epilogue emphasizes second chances. Emma's call to Sean demonstrates willingness to confront their shared loss. Their agreement to meet halfway symbolizes the mutual effort needed for reconciliation, while the doe and fawn suggest renewal. Emma's journey shows our stories aren't defined by what happens to us, but by our responses. Sometimes the most powerful last word isn't written or spoken, it's lived.